Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, Baltimore Positive. We have put the crab cake tour to respite because the Orioles are playing and the hot dogs and hamburgers are on the grill. In my case, wife's got the Silver Queen corn. I'm bitching because I don't have any watermelon. I got to get over to Wise Markets, get me some gold watermelon. Get that. They do get gold watermelon at Wise Markets, so I do love that. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery, Gold Rush Sevens, Doublers have put us out on the road. We're gonna be back at it. It feels like a long time for now, but I'm sure like when Luke and I get together on July 12th at Fadley's, it'll feel like it was just a moment ago. And the Yankees will be in town, and that nasty 5-game losing streak has ended. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions will put us out on the road as well as Jiffy Lube. MultiCare and Liberty Pure Solutions brought by the salty stuff that makes the water like work. I'm not a scientist. Luke Jones knows this. He was once a school teacher. He actually met my science teacher and knows how little I know about science. He has the science of baseball. He's trying to school me up. Hey, dude, I had a nerd on for you this week. Dude named Lee Kluck, Kluck. He wrote a book, and you're going to love this. And I know how much you love Eisenberg, and everybody knows Eisenberg's a mentor to me and, you know, one of my soul brothers, on Harry Dalton. And Harry Dalton, yeah, the bird tapes were released with Eisenberg last week, and I haven't had John on. John's been familying and summering and baseballing. I'll get John back on. I thought of John the other day because I was over at Pappas and he did the show last time I was over there. By the way, John, Patty, and I got together. Steve Elliott said it was the most enlightening hour of radio he's ever been a part of. So you'll want to hear that with John, Patty, and I getting together. I thought he was going to be rougher on me than he was, but he wasn't. But Lee Kluck did a book on Harry Dalton, and he's beautiful, dude. He's a Sabre dude. He's from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and he's a historian. He's a baseball nerd, and he was awesome. And he just gave me awesome stories about Harry Dalton in the '60s that are in the book. Of course, Harry Dalton dealt my cousin to Chicago. You know, left my dad's brother here back in the late '60s at the Flaming Pit that then became Pedonia Station. So it's crazy. I broadcast so much from a place that. My uncle was the wine sommelier, but I had a baseball conversation with nerds this week, and I kept saying to him, like, I have my own nerd, you know, my dude here. So, how are you, man? Feeling a little better? You know, they don't let me in, they let you in, and I'll never stop pointing that out. I remember going into clubhouses for 23 years and feeling that music's a little louder. Food's a little better. Clubhouse spread. I hope they still have a clubhouse, but I hope it's a little better than the Franks and Beans they used to put out in the 90s that Johnny Oates once famously threw over when we came in to find it. Man, the books I could write, Luke. How was it? Good? I mean, it's good that we're not talking about them losing because it's a whole lot more fun talking about them winning, I'll be honest.
No question about it. I mean, and as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com earlier this week, the worst losing streak is always the most recent one, right? It's always the one that is current, because you just turn the page and you win a game, and that doesn't mean everything's fixed. As we said a few days ago, the Orioles needed pitching even when they were beating the Phillies and beating the Yankees. So nothing changes on that front, but it's good to win. And I think the big takeaway from Wednesday night is Grayson Rodriguez being the stopper. I think, and you and I have talked a lot about the pitching. We'll continue to talk a lot about the pitching. Corbin Burnes, are the Orioles going to re-sign him? Are they going to try to re-sign him? Who the heck knows right now? If
They
you're going to
better try
ask
to
me,
win the World Series while they have him. I'm
oh,
just going to point that out.
I hear you, and we'll have that conversation probably 10 more times
And they are
at
trying to
least.
win the World Series for now. Let's just see what, you know, that's what the
Right,
pieces are, right?
but the point I'm trying to make isn't about Corbin Burnes. It's not about Kyle Bradish. It's not about Cade Povich. Grayson Rodriguez is the most important pitcher in the organization right now, in terms of the balance between the present and needing to be that legit serious threat as the number two starter behind Corbin Burnes. In terms of thinking of a postseason series, who knows who the number three is going to be right now? Most likely, it's someone who's not on the roster right now, if we're looking at it through that lens. But Grayson Rodriguez is going to need to factor in there big time, because I don't think they're going out and getting a number two and a number three starter. So they need Grayson Rodriguez to be that. And if we're going to work under the assumption for now, and I think it's the most logical assumption until David Rubenstein and Mike Elias suggest otherwise, that Corbin Burnes is going to move on at the end of the year, then Grayson Rodriguez becomes even more important for next year. But because Kyle Bradish isn't going to be around until later next year at best, and you don't know who else is going to fill out that rotation. So long story short, he's really important. And I think, I just pulled this up right before we hopped on our chat here. Grayson Rodriguez, going back to last July. So remember, he was called back up after the All-Star break, you know, the resuming the second half. Over his last 27 starts, Nestor, I'm going to throw in an old school stat for you. His win-loss record since the All-Star break last year, he's 14-5. He's gone 159 innings, a 3.17 ERA.
Did you just give me a win-loss record? You know better than that.
I did, and you know I'm not – you barely even hear me cite win-loss record anymore, let alone actually be the one to bring it up or to dwell on it.
But when it sounds good, it sounds good.
The point is
14-5 makes him sound like Don Sutton, which is great.
Look, you know. And at this time last year, no one would have thought he would start game two against the Rangers in the postseason last October. Now, I understand it didn't go well, right? But at the same time, we have seen this maturation for Grayson Rodriguez going back to him being sent down last May and the early struggles he had last year. But by and large, he's pitched really, really well. Now, does that mean he's going to become a bona fide ace for the next 10 years? Who knows? But at a time where the Orioles needed a stopper with a 5-game losing streak and no one's feeling very good about the pitching, no one's feeling good about the team in that moment, he went out there and he gave the Orioles 7 innings. It wasn't his most dominant performance in terms of swing and miss. And we know Cleveland is a very difficult offense to strike out. In fact, Rodriguez even talked about it after the game that he kind of went into that game knowing that probably wasn't going to be the night where I strike out 10. But he gave them 7 innings and he finished off his night with 4 straight strikeouts. So you want to talk about a young pitcher finishing off an outing strong and getting better as the night goes on. That was Rodriguez on Wednesday night. So it was great to see. And I will point this out in addition to what I just cited in terms of what his numbers have been since last July when he was recalled from Norfolk, that he's done this before. I mean, keep in mind, he was the one who threw the massive, absolutely huge start last September against the Rays on that Saturday night in mid-September when the Orioles had dropped 4 straight at that point. I mean, you want to talk about a losing streak that meant a lot more than this current one. It was that one. And he went out there and he shoved and did a great job. Just a couple weeks ago, on the heels of Kyle Bradish leaving the game against the Phillies and the Orioles losing in extra innings and going through so many bullpen arms, he tossed 7 innings against the Phillies. So, you know, just good to see. Good to see. Doesn't mean that he's arrived as a number one or anything like that. And again, time will tell, but the Orioles needed that start on Wednesday night and he gave it to him. And obviously Cedric Mullins hits the big home run in the bottom of the 7th. O'Hearn with the tack on home run that, as I've kind of pointed out with Craig Kimbrell, he's been way better with a 2-run lead than a 1-run lead in save situations. So good win. Doesn't fix everything in the same way that the sky wasn't completely falling just because they were in the midst of a losing streak. But, oh, by the way, the Yankees lost again, and the Yankees have now lost 8 of 10. And the Orioles, through this really difficult week, they go into this Texas series now 1 game out of first place. So they're fine in the short term in the sense of the day-to-day of the season. Certainly the trade deadline is crucial for this team to make upgrades, but they're on pace to win 100 games, 50-30. And when you can say that after a 5-game losing streak, you know that you're still living really well, even with some of the pitching injuries that they've obviously endured over the last month.
Yeah, I've had Texas on my mind, whether it's the border and watching what's going on there. I actually talked about that several times this week. And my cousin's in Houston. You know, she went to the game last week. And I remember being down in Arlington with you and touring the star with Jera and having pretty good barbecue as well. It feels like a minute ago, but and I would think for Adley Rutschman and for Gunnar Henderson to see the Rangers walk out at the ballpark this weekend, Joan Jett's going to be down. Might have a couple of rain delays before it's all over based on the forecast. But yeah, I remember when the fans here hated the Royals for a couple of years after the Royals embarrassed us back in 14 or whatever. I don't know if there's any angst on the Rangers side, but they certainly took care of business last year, won the World Series. Yeah, back in the day, my dad would say, you root for the team that beat you. You root for the American League team, unless it's the A's, Reggie Jackson. You don't do that. You know, I don't know that there's animosity with the Rangers, but certainly the Rangers came and took something from them last year. And you don't get a lot of opportunities to see them. Weather's heating up. Clearly, it's been a bad week, right? I mean, you know, Cleveland, you're going to see Cleveland again in October if you're good, and they're good, right? I mean, you and I started laying out our birthday plans in October and football season, and I'm doing this crazy oyster tour in September. But October, I don't know if they'll see the Texas Rangers, right? Like, this is – been a case study in winning the World Series and then like what happens the next year, what happens before. You brought up the Diamondbacks a lot about being an engine that could. Hey, dude, look up at the Astros. They're ahead of the Rangers all of a sudden after being awful in April. Beat our asses last weekend. I don't know who to worry about, but I start to look and say they're going to see Cleveland. They're going to see New York. Red Sox haven't been bad. The Red Sox have sort of put themselves in a position to maybe even be in the tournament at this point. So we're starting to see this. And as I looked at the calendar into the fall in my own personal way, because it's 4th of July week and Heritage Fair is this weekend, and we're going to see Hootie and the Blowfish and having some fun. By the way, plug for everybody. If you haven't heard the Greg Hawks interview this week, if you haven't heard the Mark Bryan interview, I've been re-airing that. I think I'm going to bust Joan Jett out because I have several interviews with Joan Jett. So I'm probably going to pop that out at Baltimore Positive for the holidays as well. But there's only a couple series left for the All-Star game. You and I are getting together on the 12th, which will be, man, we're right up on the All-Star game. It's Orioles-Yankees before the All-Star game. It's sort of like, reminds me of my conversation with Barry Stitz this week from my Little League, where we had two halves in the Little League season. He was on the rival team, and it's sort of like, it's Yankees-Orioles. He was a Yankee, I was an Oriole. So we're going to play those games, and then there's going to be an All-Star break, and they're all going to fly down to Texas, and it's going to be 158 degrees. Thought I saw you mentioned Gaylord Perry yesterday. I thought I was going to see him die in the first base dugout at the old timers game. Dude, he had that jersey on with all the patches, with all the logos. Mm-hmm. Dude, it was 120 degrees on the field that day in Arlington. It was 1995. Unbelievably hot. So they're going to go down there, but they got air conditioning now. It's nice. So they're going to go down there, and then they have to play them again. So this next couple of weeks, the Rangers feel like, let's go beat their ass this weekend. Let's get three. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't – and it feels like it would feel real good for the players. And I don't know that there's animosity or any of that, but, man, you remember the Alamo when they came and took it away from you, and you mentioned Grayson Rodriguez in the start against the Rangers. Ain't no way he's going to look at – he ain't playing this weekend, right? He ain't pitching against these guys, but he's going to look out there and say, I'm going to get the ball. I'm gonna be the starter for the first weekend. Burns and I are gonna go down there 2 weeks and make things right. And beating up the Rangers would feel fun based on what happened last year.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be totally honest with you, Nestor. I'm not sure this is a series that the Orioles have circled. These are such young guys, and we talked about this last year, right? When you're so young, and frankly, you're so good. I don't know if you think about things in those terms in the way that maybe a veteran player would, where they say, oh, I don't know how many more chances I'm going to get in October, and these guys beat us, and that animosity, like you said. I mean, it wasn't
like
there was any
walked off that field,
blood.
And you were in that locker room. I've been in locker rooms for 40 years. When you lose and get knocked out of the playoffs, you never forget who, what, sure. It's everything's amplified, really, in a big way.
It is. But again, it also, and you also know this from having been in baseball clubhouses for years and years and years, baseball players don't think about these things in the way that media and fans do. I did not see a single instance, a single example of any angst, any unnerving feeling, any player that looked distressed over this 5-game losing streak. And when you asked them about it, the players were polite in addressing the question and answering the question, but you could tell there was almost this amusement about it of like, guys, you know, we play 162 games, right? So there's some of that.
But and there's no time. It's like Harbaugh. There's no time for that. It's just alignment, assignment, technique. It's right. Just sort of like, get in the cage. Who's pitching tonight?
Right.
That's literally, who's pitching tonight? How can I hit them? Where do I need to be? Where am I in the lineup? What's my role tonight? How's my body feel? Did I eat something funny for lunch? Like, that's literally, what music can we put on? Is my girlfriend, how's that going to go tonight? And, these are young guys. And they've all lost five games in a row, and they do this every day of their lives. And by and large, in the modern society, they don't read the papers much. The football players way more, but not the baseball players.
I mean, maybe they see some social media, but that's probably about it, right? So, or MLB Network being on in the clubhouse, you know, with the bank of TVs they have. But I think if more than anything else, maybe I certainly don't think it's revenge. I certainly don't think it's any animosity. I mean, there wasn't anything that really happened in that, you know, there wasn't benches clearing incident or anything like that. I think more than anything though, Nestor, it might just be a reminder of nothing's guaranteed here. And look, the Rangers were the kings of the baseball world last October, and they deserved it, right? They won the World Series. Good for them. And they come into the series six games under 500 and got a -8 run differential. They looked for a while like they might be doing what the Astros are now in the midst of doing, which was they were playing better, and then they've come back to earth and they're on a three-game losing streak coming to Baltimore. So I think if nothing else, it's a reminder of, hey, none of this is assured. And just because you were really good last year, or just because you were really good in April and May, or, you know, in the Orioles case, just because you beat the Phillies and the Yankees in a best of three the previous week, doesn't mean that you're immune to having struggles. And the Rangers have certainly had that. Now, you know, they've gotten Max Scherzer back. We're going to see him in this series. Jacob DeGrom is getting closer to going on a rehab assignment. And, you know, it sounds like he could be back come August. I think that's kind of been the indication for that the Rangers have given out over, you know, the last recent weeks. But, you know, that's a team that just, they haven't played very well. And they haven't, even last year when they had some stretches where they were up and down, and we talked about that going into October, you know, and I even said to you probably at some point in September that the Rangers were still the team that when they were right and on fire, they scared you with that lineup and everything. And obviously last October, Eovaldi and Jordan Montgomery were so big for them. But you know, you're waiting for them to get going as the defending champs, but you just look at it and, you know, Seattle's been the class of that division. Houston is really, really heating up, where the Orioles clearly had a hand in helping the Astros do that last weekend, but they've won seven in a row. And then you have the Rangers, who are still 7.5 back and they're 6 under, and the peripherals don't look great. You know, they haven't swung the bats all that well. They haven't pitched all that well. I mean, it's just, hey, at some point it's go time. And I'm not saying that they're not going to get it going. And that's where the Orioles want to keep the foot on the gas this week in terms of, okay, the losing streak's over. You beat Cleveland. I agree with you, by the way. Guardians, really impressed with them. They're a really good baseball team, period. I don't think this was all, oh, the Orioles really stunk the last 5 days. They did, but it was also Houston red hot.
How about that Christmas dude swatting the ball? Like Yogi Berra. Like,
not just swatted the ball, but
crazy. It looked like Pedro around Serrano, dude. I swear to God.
Not only hitting that pitch where it was located, but I mean, that's Grayson Rodriguez. Grayson Rodriguez has a heck of a fastball. So to get on top of that and hit it the way he did, that was impressive. Did you happen to see, you know, obviously for anyone listening who didn't watch the game on Wednesday night, we're talking about Jackenzie Noel and his first major league at bat, first major league homer. Did you happen to see the clip of their AAA team watching? They're watching it on a laptop, you know, and their reaction to him hitting the home run.
That.
They all went nuts. Check it out. I believe Sarah Langs, you know, who obviously is beloved around baseball, you know, she tweeted it out or retweeted it, whatever it was. But that was cool to see. But yeah, that was an impressive blow. So maybe another big bat that they're adding to the mix for that lineup that's already formidable. But you know, bringing it back to the Rangers, I mean, you're waiting for them, and I don't think anyone expected them to have this major drop off this year. But again, it's a reminder, and you know, it's definitely an example of having that urgency and not resting on your laurels and not getting complacent. So this is obviously a big series in terms of the Orioles truly wanting to right the ship. You know, you don't want to just break the five-game losing streak and then lose 3 out of 4 to the Rangers. But, you know, it's also a reminder of just because of what you did last year, that doesn't mean that that's going to translate And we talked about that with Arizona earlier this year when they came to town. And certainly the Rangers are in that position where they're not out of it, but at some point, you got to start playing some good baseball, or it's going to get late early, you know, especially now with the way the Astros have heated up. So it'll be interesting to see. Certainly, you've got Corbin Burns going in the opener, so you want to start the series off on a high note. But, you know, then we'll see how do Albert Suarez and Cade Povich and Cole Irvin do. And we'll be talking about that. You know, Grayson Rodriguez, you feel good about. Corbin Burns, you feel great about every time he takes the ball. Those other three guys, obviously, of late, not so much Povich because he's a rookie and just inexperienced, but the other two guys need to see them get back on track. But, you know, it's definitely an interesting series in terms of what happened last year and last October and all those feelings. But, you know, fast forward to this year, I mean, the Orioles continue to roll, five game losing streak aside, in 2024, while, as you know, it's been a really difficult go of it for the Rangers. And, you know, at some point in time, you think they're going to get going. I mean, I don't think they're going to be this bad all year, but we're approaching, we're just about at the midway point in the schedule, right? I mean, we're there. So, you know, they've been very underwhelming, and, you know, it's easier when you have a World Series ring, but at the same time, you don't want that to cause you to completely fall off the following year. So, you know, definitely be interesting to see how this plays out over the weekend.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You know, I had Seth Elkin from the Maryland Lottery on the other day. We were actually talking a lot of old school baseball, so I always like doing that. And we're going to get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We're going to be at Fadley's on the 12th. We would highly encourage anybody this weekend, if you're downtown going to the games, stop by Fadley's, get a beer, get that mac and cheese. Just go see the new market. It's beautiful, the new Lexington Market. I talked to some folks earlier this week, said, you've been down there yet? Nah, I got to get down there. I'm like, get down there this weekend if you're going down to the Rangers game and Jones Jet and all that going on. You and I have talked a lot about Cedric Mullins. Anything you have on him now that it's kind of gotten going again? And I know you love Austin Hayes, and you can't get going if you don't get at bats, right? So you, Kerstad would be a great example of, like, in another place. And we always think they're showcasing these guys when they bring them up here and they hit a double and the helmet goes flying off. But Cedric Mullins still looks like he's rounding back into being Cedric Mullins. And that would be good news in August and September.
No question about it. I mean, he hits the big home run, had a single. And, you know, even before Wednesday night's game, over his last 44 plate appearances going into Wednesday's game, 15 for 42 with six extra base hits. I mean, he's hit much better. I think where the Orioles outfield picture is right now is so interesting. You know, not necessarily a positive, but it's interesting nonetheless, is other than Santander in right field or the occasional night where he's going to DH, no one has really played to a level where Brandon Hyde is just going to pencil their name in there every night. You know, you mentioned Austin Hayes. Hayes, look at the offensive numbers. He's been pretty good since being activated from the IL back in May. Now, that said, he's mostly playing against left-handed starters, right? He's become a platoon player. Colton Cowser got every opportunity to be that everyday guy and was an everyday guy for a long stretch there, but let's call a spade. Go look at his splits since early May. He hasn't been very good. Even if some of the batted ball data and, you know, guys like me pointing out some of the stats that you consider to be luck based, right? You know, your batting average for balls in play, et cetera. But at the same time, you got to get results. So we've seen him kind of slide back into a little more of a part-time platoon role. And obviously now you add Heston Kerstad to the mix. And I'd like to see Kerstad get some extensive bats at bats here. That doesn't mean he plays every single day, but you'd like to see what you have with him to see if he can get going. So it's both a good problem to have in the sense that you do have options that you have some conviction about, whether you're talking about veteran players like Mullins and Hayes or top prospects like Colton Cowser and Heston Kerstad, and to a lesser degree, but still Kyle Stowers when he was up here. But you're looking for guys to step forward. And yeah, let's face it, if you want to break down their offensive production by position, left field and center field have left something to be desired. Now, Santander having the white hot June that he's had has certainly stabilized his numbers, and you feel really good about him, although he's going to be a free agent. So there's also that piece of the conversation. But I'm fascinated to see what the outfield's going to look like, say, come September, when we're on the other side of the trade deadline and the Orioles have presumably made moves to get pitching, have they, in the midst of making those trades, is there a veteran player that's moved to kind of clear the deck, so to speak? I mean, we've talked about it in passing. I'd love to see this team get Kobe Mayo back up to the major leagues at some point. He's not an outfielder, but that's a right-handed bat that really, I think there's a lot of confidence and excitement that how he's going to play as a major league hitter. But, when you have O'Hearn, Mountcastle, Santander as guys that use that DH spot on occasion, Rutschman, we talked about that a couple days ago at length about him being the DH on nights that he doesn't catch. It's tough to look at their roster right now and say, okay, where does Kobe Mayo fit in here? And even if you get him here, when does he play?
What would
So,
he fetch?
yeah. So, well, look, I don't think they really want to trade him, but at the same time, you've got to give up something to get something. But the point I was making is, in the midst of looking for pitching, I would not at all be shocked to see them move a veteran player to sweeten the pot for one of those deals, but two, to clear the deck a little bit in terms of this major logjam that you have. But it's great to say you want to clear the logjam, but you want to see more consistency then from the guys that are left. So I'm, like I said,
Now, I
I'm
don't know that the
very
White
intrigued.
Sox want to pay Mullins or Hayes next year, right? Or
Well,
Santander,
I
right? It was a walk
but it
anyway.
all
Yeah.
depends. But remember, I mean, it all depends. And in any, you see this a lot in the NBA as well. Anytime you have deals that involve some veteran player, or even if we're not talking about a veteran, but let's say someone that's in their second year of arbitration and making more money, you'll see pieces thrown in there to offset the cash, and you'll see some of that. So, but you just, we've talked about it at
The piece
length.
might be, if we're going to pay him $12 million next year, you got to have Mayo in the deal. You know what I mean? Like, and if we're giving you a Dylan Cease or not him, but I'm thinking like last year, a guy that's controllable, a really good pitcher that's controllable, at the bottom of the food chain with bad teams, and you guarantee yourself another starter for the third game of the year next year. And
Yeah.
you get 30 starts out of that pitcher next year that are going to be number two, number three quality. I all of these guys at Norfolk, I mean, it's such a tree that I've been on the radio here 32 years, dude. We never had anybody we could deal at trading deadline. And certainly nobody, we always had that one Rocky Coppinger. You can't have him. You can't have this guy. You can't have Holiday. I mean, I look, you couldn't have Dylan. You couldn't have Aiken, all those guys, right? Bundy, all of those guys were the guy for a minute at AAA ball that the other teams coveted enough to send you something decent. We have a treasure chest of that and a real chance to win. So therefore, I'm with you. I don't think anything's out of, but I'm wondering how you would possibly deal a Santander out or a Mullins or a Hayes out or a Mountcastle out, how that would make sense to the other team if the team's bad in August.
Well, I mean, some of those, the names you just mentioned, I mean, they're all at different places and, in some cases, ability. I mean, I think at this point, Austin Hayes is looking more and more like a platoon kind of guy, more like the right-handed bat in a platoon and a fourth outfielder. So is there value to that to a team that might be dealing a pitcher, but isn't necessarily entering a 5-year rebuild like the Orioles were 5 years ago, right? They're not so bad where they're stripping it down to the screws and completely starting the entire organization over. And again, the part of this is the financing involved. If you're taking on a X amount of money, then hey, take on this guy. And this also clears up the log jam to help get more at bats for this guy, or gives us more at bats to give Kobe Mayo as a DH. However it plays out, I mean, there are lots of different ways that you're going to approach this. And obviously the focus is going to be on the prospects. But my point again, and a lot of this goes back to where, and I am not at all suggesting they're going to move Santander. I mean, that would be completely different. But in the right deal, would you move Austin Hayes? Would I don't think you'd move Cedric Mullins because of the defensive aspect in center field. But,
But look at what happened last year with Aaron Hicks,
is there a
right?
move where you'd
Like
move one of or
the Orioles took him last year, right? And because they'd have to pay him and like all of that. I almost equate him to Austin Hayes right now, except you'd have to pay him if you take him a little bit or deal with the financial part of that. But I'm looking at sort of like, we needed that kind of player last year. Maybe another team needs that kind of player in a specific way, right?
Right, exactly, and that's why I just said be open for any possibility here. They're obviously not they're not trading Gunnar Henderson. They're not trading Adley Rutschman. They're not trading Grayson Rodriguez. And there's some obvious other names that you would say, yeah, they're not moving that guy. Jordan Westberg, would be a big one. But in terms of trades, yes, the big focus is going to be on the prospects. That's obvious. That statement, the captain obvious statement, but. Like I said, if there is a potential fit with another team where maybe you do move a veteran player that's not playing as much anymore, like Austin Hayes, and I'm just using him more as an example than anything. It could be Jorge Mateo. It could be Ramon Arias. And again, these aren't the set. We're not. I'm not saying that's the centerpiece of a trade by any means. It might just be that's part of a bigger trade. I don't know. It might be something where the Orioles trade for a pitcher, but they might get. I don't know. There might be a position player that fills out a certain skill that they feel they're kind of lacking right now, and that guy's thrown in, and you trade
Backup
one of your
catcher,
veterans, and
maybe? No?
no, I that, that's I, you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, for all the talk that we had that long discussion the other day about playing time for Adley Rutschman, and they're catching him less because they want to keep his bat in the lineup on an everyday basis, and I've said, yeah, you can catch him more, but then you probably need to give him more complete days off where he's not in the lineup at all. So, is there a move that you could make where maybe you'd have to include an Austin Hayes kind of veteran. Obviously, the prospects that are going to require getting a starting pitcher, but maybe that team has a backup catcher that you really like their pitch framing and some of their defensive metrics. And you say, okay, well, maybe he's not going to hit much better than James McCann, but we like him more as a pitch framer. Point is, expect anything because I
Well,
don't think.
the catching thing's interesting to me because I was a catcher and catchers become managers and they're the interesting guys. I don't, this again, this speaks to me not having a press credential. I don't know McCann. I see him. He seems like a beloved or beliked guy on their team. I remember every backup catcher, every Greg Zahn, every Mark Parent, through the, oh, Rod Hendricks was a backup catcher. Like all of these people. That stuck around all hit a buck 98. Then none of them were great. Parent can hit a couple of home runs. Maybe you want him on your Stratomatic card or whatever. But I don't know what that role is. And I'm only laughing because when your starter's Adley Rutschman, it's not like Greg Maddux having his preferred catcher who might hit 110. And now all of a sudden, when pitchers are hitting at the bottom of the lineup, you're like, Greg, we're giving away 8 and 9. Greg's like, yeah, I'm going to strike out 7. The game's going to get over in 1 hour and 51 minutes. I'm going to have, I'm going to walk one. They're going to get 3 hits off me and we're going to win 3-0. And we're all going to be hanging out at the Cheetah Club by 2 a.m. So like Atlanta had that. And unless McCann becomes Grayson Rodriguez's guy or Corbin Burns. And I'm thinking, that's not possible. It's Adley Rutschman. I'm like, who doesn't want Adley Rutschman? So this is the issue with how much can Rutschman catch? We talked about that before. And who's the backup? How beloved is McCann? You're there. You tell me.
I mean, he's really well liked, but Robinson Chirinos was really well liked a couple years ago, right? I mean, you always have a type as a backup catcher, right? A veteran catcher who's been through it all. I'm not at all suggesting that they will do that, but you brought it up, and look, I've seen the same numbers, and if you go on James McCann's Statcast page, his pitch framing metrics and some of the other defensive metrics don't look great. That's not everything. That's not the end all be all. In fact, there's lots of discourse in terms of the reliability of defensive metrics, right? Beyond looking at fielding percentage and errors and what's your percentage of caught stealing, all of that. So I just think it's something to throw out there. But I'll also say this: there aren't 30 high quality starting catchers in Major League Baseball. So it's great to say, oh, well, we need a better backup catcher. How exactly are you going to go about doing that? And who is that guy? So, look, that's one of many possibilities. I think, again, expect just about anything with this trade deadline in terms of how the Orioles might proceed to get better. And yeah, like I said, it's not impossible to me to think that they might give up something from their major league roster. Not one of their best players, but someone that maybe has been around a few years. And you make, because we've talked about it with the outfield, Santander is going to be a free agent. Hayes and Mullins are going to be free agents next year and are entering a last year of arbitration eligibility, and they're going to be making a pretty good money. So,
what's pretty good money in a year when they've been a
oh,
Posey
I
player?
mean, I'd have, well, I mean, in the case of Austin Hayes, probably making more than you'd want to pay him, quite frankly. So again, so whether that comes to pass this offseason or, and again, I'm not trying to pick on Austin Hayes, but I'm just
Well,
looking
you
at
can't
where
put a
he is in the
poison pill
roster,
in a
on the roster.
deal with another team when you're trying to get their stud to some degree. I mean, the
Well, it's
poison
not a
pill would
poison
be
pill,
you'd have to
but
throw
in terms of,
Mayo into the deal, or like you put somebody in the
well,
deal you didn't want to put. But that's the way the poker game's played, right?
right. And again, we're just, we're throwing out hypotheticals. My point is, don't just think about this in terms of their prospects and only their prospects. Yes, the prospects are going to be the centerpieces, but in these deals, you'll often see a couple veteran players swapped, one position for another, adding some depth at one spot and trading from a surplus somewhere else. I mean, we've talked about it. We started talking about the outfielders because you had brought up Cedric Mullins. I mean, they're trying to figure out what this outfield picture is going to look like. I think that's a big reason why Mike Elias hasn't traded anyone from that outfield to date. But at the same time, it's great to say that and great to say you want to clear the deck, but Colton Cowser needs to be more consistent. And Heston Kjerstad, when he's called up, needs to take advantage of
They need
opportunities.
to be more
And
like Jordan Westberg.
sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Jordan Westberg was a platoon guy with Adam Frazier last year when he was called up. And what did he do? He's become an everyday player and their third best position player this year behind Henderson and Rutschman. I
I
mean,
must say, I
Jordan
was not
Westberg.
impressed with him last summer in any way that I thought we'd be this impressed with him this year, right? And this is probably the magic trick of Mike Elias in that way.
Well, and part of it is also, I mean, and if you remember, I can even remember us saying you brought up Westberg quite a bit more as an example than anything else, but you brought him up quite a bit around the trade deadline last year, thinking, oh, he might be a guy that they would trade. And I was a little more bullish on him from the sense of all he did was hit at every level in the minor leagues and hit for power. And no, he wasn't showing that same power last summer, but I saw someone who at least acquitted himself well enough to say, hey, this guy's a solid major leaguer. I don't know if he's going to become an all-star, but he looks like he belongs. He didn't have that stretch where, like Cowser did last summer, for example, or like Jackson Holiday did, albeit as a 20-year-old
Dude,
back in
or
April.
Cowser's having right now where we're like, what are you going to be?
Yeah,
You know?
exactly. I mean, I mentioned Austin Hayes has become a platoon guy. I mean, Colton Cowser, are you going to become a bona fide everyday above average starting outfielder for the next 10 years? Or are you going to be, he's a major leaguer, let's be clear on that, but, or are you going to be more of a platoon kind of guy where maybe you're not playing every day and you're kind of matchup dependent in terms of when you play. So, but Jordan Westberg has ended all that talk, and he's been one of their three best players. I mean, he's someone who has absolutely garnered some all-star consideration. Probably won't be the all-star third baseman, but he's at least been in that conversation, and he's been a big reason why this team is on a 100-win pace as we're right at the midway point on the 2024 schedule. So, I mean, it's with young players and prospects, it's great. And there's excitement and optimism. And some of these guys we've talked about for 3 or 4 years now. And some of them have become superstars already, like Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman. Some have become, at the very least, a fringe all-star caliber player like Jordan Westberg. And then other guys you're still kind of waiting and seeing. Cowser's done some great things, and he's had some stretches where you say, oh, he needs to be better. Heston Kjerstad, Kyle Stowers. Jackson Holiday, who's back in the lineup at Norfolk and, kind of going through a,
But as high
little
as
bit of
we
a.
are on Cowser versus like Westberg, and I don't want to belabor it, but had Cowser been in the deal for Burns and we still had Ortiz would be hitting 294 in Norfolk, and Cowser would be in there doing whatever he's doing in Milwaukee, right? Like doing what he's doing here, maybe we'd say. You know, it's never that way, really. But Ortiz is gone, and I bring it up once a week. You bring it up once a week because there is a cost. That's all. There is a
Yeah,
cost. That's all.
no doubt. And hey, Joey Ortiz, by the way, have you seen his numbers? Joey
I
Ortiz
know.
is playing really, really
I
well.
keep
Good for
tabs
him.
on these cats. I kept
Yeah.
tabs on Eduardo Rodriguez for years, you
Well,
know?
and keep in mind, this is This is how it was supposed to go. Now, not with Kyle Bradish and John Means and Tyler Wells getting hurt, but we saw the Orioles for four straight years, draft college hitters, and not draft much pitching. And we said it at the time when they got to this point, ideally in their long-term rebuild and transforming into a contender, that they would have a surplus of positional player talent, and they would use some of that to go out and get pitching or go out and get whatever specific need you might have to fortify your chances to compete and contend and win a World Series. So part of that is that was always going to be inevitable. Mike Elias, for the most part, has held on to all of it, and people have varying opinions about that. But yeah, the time is coming. I think it's very obvious now. Albert Suarez is not going to be part of a postseason rotation. Cole Irvin very likely is not going to be. Cade Povich, he's done some good, some bad. He's a rookie. Right now, it's tough for me to pencil him in for any more than the number four, number five starter spot. So they have a clear need, whether it's a number three behind Burns and Rodriguez or a number two that slots between those guys. They have a clear need. So go out and use some of that prospect talent that you have to go out and get it. My only point in bringing up the veterans was there could be other pieces involved in such a deal. And it might be, hey, you need a starting pitcher, but oh yeah, as I've been saying since February or March, they need bullpen help too. So it might be that you go out in the and acquire some team's number two or number three starter, and you also get a bullpen arm in that deal. And yeah, that's when you might be including a veteran piece or whatever.
It's the time of season for feelings to get hurt. Let's just say that. That's it.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, we've said this for years now, especially with some of the guys who've been here and who were here when this team was awful four or five years ago. We knew that not all those guys were going to be there. If the Orioles were going to get to a point where they're raising a pennant or raising a World Series trophy in the future, we knew that not all those guys were going to be there. You know, Trey Mancini was the first one, when they traded him 2 years ago. But, that's inevitable. Change is inevitable. And, these guys understand that. But at the same time, when you're in the moment, it is challenging. And it is something that's why the trade deadline is always a really easily the most difficult time of the season inside a clubhouse. I mean, 5-game losing streaks, winning streaks, hey, that's great. But there's going to be a lot of angst in that Orioles clubhouse come mid to late July until the trade deadline. And yeah, it'll probably be mostly prospects dealt, with whatever deals they make. But
somebody's going to get a little come see. Mike needs to see you.
I would not be surprised if you saw a veteran player or two move just because of the logjam. So we'll see how it plays out.
Big weekend of Texas Rangers, Joan Jett. Sing some crimson and clover. I love Joan Jett. So I may put my Joan Jett stuff out at Baltimore Positive this weekend. I don't know that I need to. We've had such great, great stuff this week. I loved having Barry Stitz, my old friend from Little League and the Blast and the Spirit and Archbishop Curley. We talked old school soccer. We talked neighborhoods and Little Flower and Eastwood and Highland Town. And we both say it the right way. So great soccer chat. Mike Liber joined us too, talking some soccer this week. I had Copa going on, Messi playing up the road, soccer on televisions everywhere over Pappas the other day. Maryland Crab Cake Tour's back out on the road on the 12th at Fadley's in Lexington Market. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Gold Rush Sevens, Doublers, making it happen. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. Luke, I haven't broken the news to Bill Cole, but I broke his mug yesterday all over the floor. It took me a half an hour to clean it up. I am distraught about it. But the good news is I do have this is the poop tower from Colgate, the original one. Well, they have the twin towers now, but this is my neighborhood mug that was given to me. So Colt Lane's Two Guys is on there, the old East Point Mall logo on there, the Roll Arena where I met my my child's mother as a kid. She grew up in that neighborhood, North Point Village, right by Costas. There's a North Point Plaza where I went to my first movie. So this is my Dundalk mug. So I just want to give Cole Roofing some love and Gordian Energy. Billy came on this week. I have all sorts of editing issues with it because we talked for like an hour and a half. It's been It's been something. It's 4th of July week. Conversations are going to be thick next week around here. Baseball is going to be thick as the Orioles go to the West Coast next week as well. And Luke will be celebrating on his vacation in a few weeks. I'm not vacationing anywhere. I'm vacationing in Dundalk like a good Baltimorean here watching baseball all weekend. So hang in there. Hold on. We got a great summer ahead, a great pennant race ahead. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST. AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore. Positive. Got to call Bill Cole and get a new mug.